TED Audio Collective. Welcome back to TED Health. It's Dr. Shoshana. We live in a world today where talking about a totally normal, natural biological process is often shrouded in secrecy and shame. Can you guess which one it is? I'm talking about menstruation. Despite being as old as humanity itself, it's a subject that often evokes discomfort and hushed tones. In her 2020 TED-Ed Weekend Talk, social activist Ananya Grover makes a case for raising awareness of menstrual health and period positivity. Join us for a conversation about breaking taboos and a movement towards embracing the natural and the necessary. Then stick around after for a conversation with renowned OBGYN activist and fellow TED Audio Collective host, Dr. Jen Gunter, where we break down myths and misconceptions around all things periods.
You're growing a business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate, no coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Support for this podcast comes from The Wonderful Company. If that name doesn't sound familiar to you, you probably know the pistachios that come from this company. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. I love the various Wonderful Pistachio flavors. So in addition to the original flavor, I'm particularly fond of the salt and vinegar, and I keep little packets of them in my car so that I can eat and get some protein on the run. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
Hey everyone, it's Adam Grant. I host a podcast called Rethinking about the science of what makes us tick. This season, we're talking about navigating young adulthood with clinical psychologist Meg Jay.
If I had to pick one word that I hear from 20-somethings more than any other word in terms of where the struggles come from, it's uncertainty. And so I think just the uncertainty involved in how do you make those big life decisions? How do you take control of your life?
Find and follow Rethinking with Adam Grant wherever you're listening.
Menstruation, a simple word describing a natural biological process weighed down by centuries of stigma, has been transformed into something most of us can only speak about in whispers. But why? As I speak to you right now, more than 800 million women around the world are having a period. None of us would exist without it, and yet it remains an embarrassing subject to broach. From my experience and that of the women around me, I can tell you that it's exhausting. It's exhausting to carefully take out a brown paper bag hiding a pad, stuffing it into your pocket in the middle of a class and rushing to the washroom as discreetly as possible. It's exhausting to sit through lessons and meetings pretending to be absolutely normal while internally crying out from intense period cramps. It's exhausting to be dismissively told that you're PMSing or suffering from that time of the month, and it's exhausting to continuously fight back against age-old traditions that ask you not to pray, visit temples, cook, touch pickle, and the list goes on and on, while you're just trying to bleed and be left in peace. But you know what the worst part is? The worst part is that the things that seem tiring to us are merely the tip of the iceberg. Because we in this room are privileged enough to be able to afford sanitary napkins every month, to be able to visit a gynecologist in case of any problem, to be able to tell what's normal and abnormal with our monthly cycle. We have access to water, sanitation, and toilets that help us maintain our privacy and hygiene. But what about those who don't? What about 335 million girls around the world who go to school without even having access to water and soap to wash their hands? What about 15-year-old schoolgirls in Kenya who have to sell their bodies to be able to buy sanitary napkins? What about 2/3 of rural high school girls in India who don't even understand what their bodies are going through at menarche? And right now, we are all gathered here in the USA. So what about 64% of women in St. Louis, Missouri, who weren't able to afford menstrual hygiene supplies in the previous year? What about the struggles of homeless, transgender, intersex, and displaced people who menstruate? What about them? The scale of the problem, stemming in part from the deep-rooted stigma attached to menstruation, is unimaginable. And the desire to voice this frustration led me, along with three other teammates, to initiate a campaign that calls for change, questions the taboos surrounding menstruation, and spreads period positivity. The name of our campaign, Pravahakriti, was born from the message that we want to convey to the world. Pravaha means flow, and Kriti means a beautiful creation. Because how could the monthly cycle that ultimately gives rise to all creation be anything less than beautiful? Now, as a social issue, menstruation has several facets to it that overlap, reinforce, and worsen the situation. So we based our campaign on four fundamental pillars: health, hygiene, awareness, and spreading positivity. But how did we actually implement this? Well, we started within the walls of our school classroom. Instead of simply explaining menstruation to children from a textbook or biological standpoint, we adopted an innovative approach. We conducted an activity where students strung together a bracelet consisting of 28 beads, signifying the length of the menstrual cycle, out of which 4 to 7 beads were of a different color, demonstrating the days a woman bleeds. And in this way, we not only explained what periods are in a manner that was educational, but also approachable and engaging. To offer another example, we explored various ways of alleviating cramps, including preparing some natural remedies in school itself. And we didn't just stop at involving girls in our campaign. In fact, boys were equally involved, and one of our core team members is also a boy. Through internal conversations where girls could freely share their personal experiences and boys could just ask questions, no matter how dumb they might seem, our male volunteers quickly got over their awkwardness, not just supporting, but also leading educational sessions. Clearly, starting an inclusive conversation, including members of all genders, in listening to and supporting each other can go a long way. Now, to make our campaign successful, we conducted extensive research, interviewed gynecologists, surveyed people to gauge public opinion on periods, and conducted a panel discussion with professionals working in this field. And then we undertook the journey to create change. We organized a stall at Shilpotsav, a local fair, where we distributed sanitary napkin-shaped envelopes and bookmarks containing period-positive messages. We donated hundreds of pads that we had collected through a pad donation drive at school. Interacting with young girls in government and charitable schools, we explained periods to them through a game of hopscotch and distributed period kits that we had made ourselves that consisted of a pad and other items like a paper soap and sanitizer for maintaining hygiene, a piece of dark chocolate just to lift their mood, a sachet of ginger tea, and so on. In whatever we did, we strived to think beyond the norm and break barriers, be it by creating a physical period tracker to help girls without access to the internet to record their monthly cycle, sensitizing the masses by performing street plays, or even developing a video game called Crimson Crusade that introduces both boys and girls to problems faced by menstruating women globally and players progress in the game by defeating menstrual monsters. To sustain this effort, we've installed 10 sanitary napkin dispensers in several schools. Gradually, people's mindsets are changing. But does change come so easily? At a school for the underprivileged, we encountered a girl who had just got her first period but wasn't wearing anything to absorb the flow. Imagine being her, sitting in class feeling embarrassed and uncomfortable, looking down and seeing red, asking your parents for help, asking what was going on with you, and being dismissed. Imagine the shame, fear, and embarrassment for being caught doing something wrong that forces you into living in ignorance and silence at the cost of your health and dignity. While we do our part, our endeavors will only be successful if each one of you internalizes and spreads onward the idea that menstruation is completely normal, if each one of you conveys this message to every person you know. When we can discuss digestion, blood circulation, and respiration, all natural biological processes, why should menstruation be off limits? And you too can help make it less taboo, simply by being more open with male friends and family members, supporting local and international organizations working to improve menstrual hygiene management, making menstrual bracelets with middle school kids in your area, or even by playing Crimson Crusade with your friends. Every small step counts, because brushing this topic under the carpet perpetuates lack of access to sanitary absorbents, ignorance of menstrual health issues, school absenteeism, infection, and so much more. I'd like to end with a few lines a volunteer wrote for us. Let the crimson tide turn. Let there be waves of positivity, thundering applause, villages full of women who bleed with pride. Let there be a scent of education drifting through the oxygen inhaled by men, women, and children. Let all know the marvels of menstruation and celebrate Pravahakriti. Thank you.
That was Ananya Grover at TED Ed Weekend 2020. And now I'd like to welcome a special guest who can help us build on the ideas in this talk. Dr. Jen Gunter is an OBGYN, a pain medicine physician, and a New York Times bestselling author. She's the host of the TED Audio Collective podcast, Body Stuff, and her most recent book, Blood, The Science, Medicine, and Mythology of Menstruation, was released earlier this year. Jen, what inspired you to write Blood and focus on menstruation, which is a topic, gosh, so often shrouded in myths and misconceptions?
Well, you know, for me, I had, you know, written the Vagina Bible, and I had written a book on menopause, the Menopause Manifesto. And, you know, lots of questions about menopause to me seem to stem from maybe not having a great understanding of the menstrual cycle. So that was kind of part of it, sort of in the back of my mind. And around this time was the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. And there were all these fears about the vaccine affecting fertility and things that it could do. And obviously, if you knew the science of how it worked, it would seem, you know, absolutely ridiculous, this idea that you could shed spike proteins that would affect somebody else's menstrual cycle. This seemed to be the time when there was also this rise of disinformation about hormonal contraception on especially video platforms like TikTok and Instagram Reels. And so I kind of put all those things together and said, I think the common denominator is people need to know more. So that's kind of where it came from.
Yeah. And in the book, you talk about how menstruation affects more than 72 million Americans every month. So why do you think such a common experience is still so poorly understood in our society?
Well, I mean, you know, the short answer is the patriarchy, which, you know, so I think that, you know, you have this longstanding patriarchal notion that the menstrual cycle and menstruation is gross or polluting or dirty. And many women feel shame about talking about it because of these patriarchal ideas. Then you have the fact that, you know, women's health and menstrual health has been understudied and underacknowledged. So we often don't have answers to things. And when people, you know, don't have answers, they often go to places that are less accurate sources of disinformation. And so I think we have this big data void out there. You know, we have things like endometriosis that affects 10% of people who menstruate, but, you know, women's pain is undervalued, right? So you sort of look at all these layers, all these symptoms. You know, if you're having a menstrual problem, you're too hormonal. So that sort of plays into also all those misogynistic tropes.
Okay, so you've mentioned the lack of real information about periods, and we focus instead on reproduction. How does this limited perspective really impact women's health and their understanding of their bodies?
Yeah, I mean, poning on to the last question too about this idea that we don't teach people in schools about their reproductive biology, right? How their uterus and ovaries actually work. You know, we scare them about pregnancy, and of course, teen pregnancy is a significant issue. But a lot of times this information is framed around how to put a condom on a banana, for, you know, lack of a better sort of summing up what people take away from their sex education, as opposed to like, this is how your ovaries work. This is how your menstrual cycle works. And what happens is people don't have any practical information about their biology. So they don't know, for example, what it means to have periods that are too heavy, right? So many people suffer with it. And a sad real world consequence is 40% of women ages 22 and younger are iron deficient.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, 40%. And so you have these heavy periods, you have no idea that they're heavy because no one's told you what normal is and what concerning is. And so then you just suck it up and suffer. You ask your friends, they don't know because no one taught them. But what if there was a lecture in school that explained what's normal, what's abnormal, what's concerning? And it certainly could be made very interesting from a biological perspective as well.
Oh, that would have been game changing for me. So your book really aims to debunk many myths about periods. Can you share a couple of the most pervasive ones and some of the truths behind them?
So one of the most pervasive ones is the concept of menstrual cycle syncing. So this idea that if you put a bunch of women together in a room, like, you know, in a dorm, in a work, in one of those kinds of environments, that they're all going to have their menstruation at the same time. And that's just biologically implausible. There's no mechanism by which my reproductive cycle can affect yours. And then people always say, well, what about pheromones? But no one has ever actually proven the existence of human pheromones. And we don't have a functioning vomeronasal organ, which is the organ that detects pheromones. So that's one of the biggest myths. And I actually find it really problematic because to me, it's sort of positions women as breeders, you know, that you're like cattle, like you can put all your cattle together and get them in sync so you can inseminate them all at once. I don't know. That's the feeling it evokes for me, as opposed to the fact that, you know, you're a sentient being and your own biology is controlled by you. You know, no one ever says that if you put a group of men together, they all start having erections at the same time, right? Like,
true. I just had an interesting visual there.
Well, no, but I mean, like, you know, the way they, you know, I always think when I hear these myths, would we say that about a man? And of course, it always sounds ridiculous when you do. So,
yep, exactly. So I want to talk a little bit more about misinformation. What can be done to counteract this from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one answer is education. And that's actually what studies tell us, is that people not only need to learn about the subject, but they actually have to learn how to fact check. We actually know that when people go online to look up medical information, they often end up more uninformed. And that's because nobody has taught them how to look the information up online, right? So if you just Google period syncing, because it's been disproven, those sites are like, they're not even relevant. Like, they're not going to come up. So what happens is you get all these naturopath websites and hormone balancing websites that have all this stuff about it. So if you were to research it, you'd look at those first three or four hits, you'd see they all support it, and you'd say, oh, of course, it's a thing.
So in the book, which does so much to kind of educate and counteract a lot of misinformation, you talk also about the practical aspects of menstruation. So tell us from your perspective how women can be better advocates for themselves when it comes to period-related concerns in the doctor's office and then in the world.
Well, of course, you know, I'm going to say read my book. And you know, you shouldn't have to do this. But what I say is, so say you're concerned you have heavy bleeding. You read the chapter, and there's very specific things that we recommend people do when we think you have heavy bleeding. You go to the doctor, and if the doctor says, oh, we don't need to do any of those tests, well, you could pull out the book and you could say, well, why does it say I need these tests in here? Can you please show me the guidelines that say I'm wrong? there should always be an answer for a question. Now, sometimes it's not the answer people want to hear, but there should always be an answer that makes sense. And you shouldn't be afraid to ask for a second opinion. But as a subspecialist, which is what I am, I do a ton of second opinions. Sometimes someone's had great advice from the referring doctor, but they just needed to hear it from somebody else who could maybe phrase it in a different way. That's fine. That's okay. We get second opinions all the time. Have you ever asked one friend how you look in an outfit and then asked somebody else? That's the second opinion.
Oh, I go for third and fourth opinions, you know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, I shouldn't say you don't want to, but sometimes you do.
Oh, I was just talking about my outfit.
Right. But, yes. But, you know, I think that it's just important that people, if you go in knowing like what the standard of care is, it puts you on a much better footing with your doctor. Because then when they say something, you can say, well, but the American College of OBGYN says that heavy bleeding is clots that are bigger than a quarter. And I have clots that are bigger than a quarter. I'd like to have that investigated. So we know that, for example, when people have had lifelong heavy periods, that you want to get tested for bleeding disorders. And, you know, you want to get your iron level checked because, as we said, lots of people have iron deficiency. You want to get your blood count checked so you know you don't have anemia. You need an examination of your uterus to make sure it isn't large and there could be fibroids. So there definitely are things to do.
Great. So I want to talk a little bit about endometriosis. Can you talk just a little bit about what that is and about the latest treatment approaches and sort of how they've evolved?
Yeah. So endometriosis is unfortunately still an enigmatic condition, which is really sad to say considering it affects 10% of people who menstruate, right? 10% is a lot. We don't quite understand the cause, but we do know that it is when cells that are similar to the lining of the uterus are growing outside in the pelvic cavity. And for some people, it can cause terrible pain. It can cause heavy bleeding. It can lead to infertility. And for other people, it has zero symptoms altogether. And it can cause bowel symptoms because it can grow on the bowel, or the inflammatory mediators released from endometriosis can have an impact on the bowel. There's a higher incidence of fatigue associated with it. And so we don't quite know the basic biology. We don't even really know how it originates. There's lots of theories. And I think this really points out to sort of the impact of patriarchy, right? So when you don't understand the basic biology of a medical condition very well, it's pretty difficult to design a therapy, right? And we don't even know if it's all one disease or if it's different diseases, or are there genetic reasons that one person has terrible pain and someone else doesn't at all? And, you know, the treatments are hormonal suppression of the menstrual cycle because we believe estrogen is a trigger for growth, exposing people to the hormone progestin, which is a synthetic form of progesterone, which for some people can help slow the growth of endometriosis. And there are other medications that work on the brain level at shutting off estrogen production. And there's also new research into, well, limited, but still new research into a drug called basodoxifene, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator. And it actually suppresses the growth of endometrium. And there's actually been a couple of, you know, interesting small papers that have come out about that, which I find really interesting because that's kind of a whole new sort of avenue of research.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see there's been progress, some progress made, but certainly much more needs to happen.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the endometrium, the lining of the uterus. We know this is connected to the immune system. Can you talk about this connection and its implications for women's health?
Yeah. So the lining of the uterus, the endometrium, is part of the immune system. It has immune cells in it, which kind of makes sense because you think about it's open to the environment, right? You know, sperm get up there. You can, if you injected fluid into the vagina with enough pressure, it would get into the uterus. The baby's essentially connected to the outside world when it comes out. So the endometrium has a robust immune system that helps protect against viruses and bacteria. It also is an important part of implantation and pregnancy, depends on the immune system as well. So part of the immune system is involved even in sensing quality of embryos with implantation. And if the quality of the embryo is low, the endometrium can mount an immune response to trigger a miscarriage.
Wow. Jen, talk about some of the more exciting innovations in period products that you've seen come out recently.
Yeah, I would say resurgence of menstrual cups and menstrual discs is fantastic. Certainly, they have been around for a while, but they, you know, kind of in the 1980s, And a lot of the 1990s seem to kind of be in a bit of a dead space, but there really has been a resurgence. I think that's great, especially from an environmental standpoint. The less we use, the better for everything. I think menstrual underwear is fantastic too. This idea that you can have underwear that you can wash and not have to worry about leaking onto your clothes, especially for younger people, right? So if you're 14 or 13 and your periods are still irregular, if you have menstrual underwear and you're wearing that as your underwear, you don't have to worry about all of a sudden leaking onto your clothes, right? And obviously we shouldn't have shame in that. You know, there's been some innovations in tampon design to try to improve or reduce leakage and things like that. So I think it's great. I think I'm always happy to see where it goes. But I also think it's really important because of the legacy of the Rely tampon that, you know, we actually have these products studied and evaluated in appropriate ways.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so the Rely tampon was a brand new tampon that was introduced. This was before they kind of got grandfathered in, before the FDA had any regulation over tampons. And these products aren't FDA approved, but they have to be cleared by the FDA. And so this was before any of that. If you wanted to design a tampon to create an environment for toxic shock syndrome, the Rely tampon would be that tampon. And it was super absorbent. And in fact, the tagline was, even absorbs the worry. And it expanded, most tampons expand up to down, like lengthwise, but the Rely also expanded widthwise. So when you pulled it out, it caused trauma, little micro cracks in the skin. And it also had a brand new material that hadn't been used that actually, when compressed and then expanded, could release air into the vagina, right? So we now know that introducing air into the vagina is the mechanism by which that changes the environment and allows the bacteria that produces toxic shock syndrome to grow. And having micro tears allows that toxin easier entry into the blood. So now that we have regulation, if you have a brand new tampon, you have to submit data to the FDA to show that it doesn't create an environment where growth of toxic shock syndrome or growth of the toxin that produces toxic shock syndrome would be encouraged.
And just so listeners know, how long ago was this, the Rely tampon, taken off the market?
I think it was 1980.
Long time ago.
Yeah. It's been off the market for a long time. And, you know, there can be two truths here. So one truth is the Rely tampon was dangerous. But the other truth can also be that people oversell that to scare people away from using vaginal products, right? So you also hear that. And I always like to remind people that you can get toxic shock syndrome from a cut, from a burn, from surgery. And you never hear about that, right? No one ever talks about toxic shock syndrome from my whatever surgery on my knee or from a dog bite or whatever, however else it happened. And the incidence of menstrual toxic shock syndrome is now about the same as toxic shock syndrome from other causes. But the fact that you only really hear about it when it's menstrual toxic shock syndrome tells me that scaring women makes copy.
Your book is described as really an all-in-one guide. What do you hope that readers will take away from it in terms of really changing the conversation around periods?
Well, I hope they take away that there's a lot of information to know and you can learn it. And learning how your body works will help you make educated decisions about your body, meaning which medication you think is right, having to get care for whether your periods are heavy or for your menstrual migraines, or understanding more about your PMDD, or even realizing, hey, I might have PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So I think it's hopefully going to empower people that way, empower them also to know what's snake oil and online, and to also learn who's kind of out there for their health and who might be out there to make the sale.
So how can women and girls have a better relationship with their periods?
Well, so I always like to say periods are optional. If you don't want to have menstruation, you don't have to. You can take hormonal contraception and get rid of your menstrual cycle, and that's not harmful. So I think that's important to say. As someone who sees people who are really negatively affected by their menstruation and their menstrual cycle, and I think the most important thing is really just to be educated about it, because it is, everybody has a different belief about their body. And for some people, they might think it's an amazing, wonderful, natural thing, and other people might hate it. And there might be kind of every variation in between. And so I just think giving people the knowledge then lets them approach that in the ways that they want to. But I also hope people understand that it's not dirty or toxic in the way that the patriarchy wants them to think.
Jen, my goodness, this has been such a fantastic conversation. Your book is wonderful, and I truly believe life-changing. So I recommend it, and just thank you for taking the time to talk to me and for writing this book and all the work that you do.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I just want people to know. I don't want people to say, how did I not know that? I want people to say, oh my gosh, I know that.
And that's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. TED Health is a part of the TED Audio Collective. I'd love to hear your thoughts about the episode. Send me a message on Instagram at ShoshanaMD. This episode was produced by me and Costanza Gallardo, edited by Alejandra Salazar, and fact-checked by Vanessa Garcia Woodworth. Special thanks to Maria Lagis, Faraday Grunge, David Biello, Daniela Balarezo, and Michelle Quint. I'm Dr. Shoshana Ungerleiter, and I'll talk to you again next week.